To headlines this hour, people in Turkey head to the polls in a historic presidential runoff between the incumbent Recep Tayyip Erdogan and the opposition leader Kemal Kılıçdaroğlu. Dozens of Israeli settlers, heavily guarded by Israeli forces, once again break into the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound and occupied outlets. And Ukraine reports fresh Russian drone attacks on the capital Kiev, while saying Moscow has eased attacks in and around the flashpoint city of Bakhmut. It's good to have you with us. Starting off with Turkey, people there are heading back to the polls in a presidential runoff that pits the incumbent Recep Tayyip Erdogan against the opposition leader Kemal Kılıçdaroğlu. Some 64 million people are eligible to elect the president for the next 5 years. Erdogan is seen as a favorite to extend his two decades of rule. He secured over 49.5% of the votes in the first round, narrowly missing out on an outright victory. Kılıçdaroğlu came second with less than 45% of the votes. Erdogan has also secured the endorsement of the third-placed candidate Sinan Ogan. Key election issues are the economy, earthquake relief operations, and refugees. Let's find out how things are going in Turkey. And from Istanbul, our correspondent Roshan Saglam joins us. Roshan, over to you.
Yes, actually, Kafe, within the last 2 hours, we have been hearing numbers and seeing people flocking more and more towards the polling stations. However, still, we are not going to see in this runoff the same number that we saw in the first round, which is 88%, or more than 88%. I think the number will be less than that. However, still, if we get 80% in this election from those who are eligible to vote, I think this would also be a high number, because in all over the world, we don't see such numbers in elections. So I think the number will be good. Still, the political parties are not able to speak to the voters. However, many from the political parties are talking to their supporters and telling them to continue calling for people to go and vote in the polling stations. Of course, none of the candidates is able to campaign, talk to the voters. However, the political parties are actually trying to do that on behalf of the candidates, and they're trying to actually push people to vote. Also, the political parties are trying to push the 8 million who did not vote in round one to vote actually in this round. Now, speaking to people in schools, I was just at a school an hour ago, and speaking to people, they said that they are voting for the future of the country. That's why they are going to the polling stations, and they say that this election is the most important in Turkey's history. And most of them, they said that they want to support the change in the country. Those who are, of course, voting for Kemal Kılıçdaroğlu, the opposition candidate, they're wanting to support the change, the democracy in the country. And we also spoke to people who are supporting President Erdogan and voting for him. I spoke to 5 minutes ago to one of Erdogan's supporters, and he said that he wants to vote for stability in the country, and he does not want to vote for terrorism or a candidate that is supported by a political party that has suspicious terrorism hands in, like a political party that's supporting him that has hands in terrorism in Turkey and outside Turkey. Of course, he was speaking about the HDP, Kurdish political party that is actually supporting the opposition candidate Kemal Kılıçdaroğlu, which it says that he is affiliated with the PKK, the party that is on the terror list in Turkey, the EU, and the United States, of course. Now, if we want to speak about the numbers, as we always mention, 64 million and more people are eligible to vote in 81 provinces in Turkey. The highest number of people who voted so far is in Ankara, Izmir, so far, and Istanbul, of course. However, in other provinces, we started seeing more people flocking towards the polling stations. Now, I am at the Bosphorus right now, and behind me is Üsküdar. It is the hometown of President Erdogan. 2 hours ago, Erdogan was over there voting, casting his vote with his wife, Emina Erdogan. And he said that everything is going very well. And he mentioned that he is going to Ankara to celebrate the win. So Erdogan is probably sure from the win so far, as per what he said in Üsküdar. He came to the polling station using the Turkish Electric newly made TOG car. And yes.
Thank you very much for that, Roshan Saglam. We appreciate it. Roshan Saglam, a correspondent there from Istanbul. Thanks. Moving on, tens of thousands of people have yet again for the fifth month flocked to the streets of Tel Aviv, protesting against the Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's proposed judicial overhaul. The consecutive weekly protests have seen some success in that the plan has not been approved as quickly as Netanyahu had hoped. But it seems that the Prime Minister and his far-right cabinet remain committed to pushing through the changes, despite being under immense pressure both at home and abroad to scrap the plan. Netanyahu agreed to delay the overhaul to try to negotiate with the opposition a middle ground. But after shifting focus to pass the annual budget last week, the highly contested plan is again at the forefront. Economists have warned that an independent court system is crucial, that the plan would further isolate the Israeli regime internationally. Anti-war activist Richard Becker joined us earlier and told us why Netanyahu's far-right cabinet is so adamant to push through the plan and what the protesters must do for any real change.
If they do not go through with the plan, if the plan does not pass, or if it's not ratified by the Knesset, the parliament, then the coalition government that presently exists will collapse. This extreme right-wing government that has actual fascists in it is built on the idea that they can go forward with plans to annex the West Bank and other territories as well, and dispossess more of the Palestinian population. But again, the big problem here is that today, in what was the British Mandate or colony of Palestine, the Palestinian population and the Israeli population are about the same. The Palestinian population is probably a little bigger. But whether they live in West Bank or they live in Gaza or they live inside the 1948 borders of Israel, all in different forms, but all of this Palestinian population suffers under a form of apartheid. And as for long as that issue is not addressed, and so far the protests have not addressed that and have avoided it and even suppressed people with Palestinian flags coming to the demonstrations, unless that changes, I don't think there can be any real change in the state of it.
Dozens of Israeli settlers, heavily guarded by Israeli forces, have broken into the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound in occupied outlets and performed rituals there. This is not the first time settlers stormed the mosque, which is revered by Palestinians and other Muslims as an Islamic holy site. Since the year 2003, the Israeli regime has allowed settlers into the compound almost on a daily basis. Palestinians dismissed the settlers' presence at the mosque as provocative. Tensions have been running high between Palestinians and Israeli settlers over the latter's trespassing on the holy site. Israel captured East Outlets, where the Al-Aqsa Mosque is located, back in 1967. Mona Kandil is a correspondent joining us from occupied Ramallah to tell us more about this. Well, tell us what has occurred here and how many settlers are we talking about?
As you were saying, under heavy Israeli military protection, over 160 settlers raided the Al-Aqsa Mosque complex this morning from the Al-Maghariba Gate. And then Al-Maghariba Gate was completely closed, preventing Palestinian worshippers and Muslims to enter the Al-Aqsa Mosque and its complex for prayers. According to the endowment of department in Al-Quds, the Islamic endowment of Department of Al-Quds, 40 police officers also were accompanying those 160 settlers as guests, honor guests, raided the Al-Aqsa Mosque complex. 30 students, Jewish students as well, and they unfortunately performed religious rituals inside the Al-Aqsa Mosque complex. According to a statement, 2,230 settlers have raided the Al-Aqsa mosque complex as tourists and not as Jewish settlers. And this is the way it's being used by the Israeli authorities and by the Israelis. They claim that they are tourists. They are not entering the Al-Aqsa Mosque complex for the prayers. They try to hide their real identity. And however, they when they storm the complex, they perform their rituals. We have to mention that the Israelis since Thursday were, let's say, marking one of their Jewish holidays that continued for 2 days, and Thursday and Friday. And during these days, every day, hundreds of Israeli settlers escorted by Israeli soldiers were raiding the Al-Aqsa Mosque complex. At the same time, Palestinian Muslims, their ID had been taken from them at the numerous checkpoints surrounding the Al-Aqsa Mosque, as well as in the old town of Al-Quds, preventing them from freely entering the Al-Aqsa Mosque to pray, at the same time allowing the Israeli settlers to enter the Muslim site.
Thank you very much for that. Mona Kandil from Occupied Ramallah. Thank you. Moving on, Ukraine says Russian troops have temporarily eased attacks in and around the flashpoint city of Bakhmut to regroup and to strengthen their capabilities. Russia says its forces have completely taken over the city, but Kiev says it still controls pockets of Bakhmut. The battle for the city has been the longest and bloodiest of the war. The capture of the city would bring Russia slightly closer to its goal of controlling the whole of Donetsk region. Meanwhile, Ukraine says it will soon launch a highly anticipated counteroffensive. Ukrainian defense officials say the push could start as soon as tomorrow, or ultimately by the end of the week. Ukraine says the offensive aims to recapture territory taken by Russia since the start of the war. Ukraine says at least one person has been killed and another injured after Russia unleashed a major two-wave overnight air attack on Kiev. Several districts of the capital, by far the largest Ukrainian city, with a population of around 3 million, suffered in the overnight attacks. According to Kiev's mayor, the raid was conducted by drones. He says air defense systems downed at least 20 unmanned aircraft. Moscow has intensified missile and drone strikes on Kiev this month after a lull of nearly 2 months, targeting military facilities and supplies. Tens of thousands of Serbs have taken to the streets of Belgrade in an anti-government protest over two mass shootings that killed 18 people. Crowds surrounded a compound housing the state broadcaster, calling for the resignation of the Serbian president. They also demanded more media freedom. This was the fourth such protest organized by opposition parties. They accused the government of failing to rein in media that have promoted violence and to act against criminal elements in society. The government denies opposition parties' allegations, accusing them of staging protests for political gain. On May 3, a young boy killed 9 students and a security guard in Belgrade in the first school mass shooting in Serbia. One day later, a 21-year-old man killed 8 others outside of the city. French police brutality against protesters continues to occur, and one group which knows plenty about that subject are the Yellow Vest anti-government protesters. They still gather every Saturday nationwide and do so despite regular harassment by police and judges. Rami Mazari has more from Paris.
When climate activists were tear-gassed, abused, and arrested by police in Paris, the Western mainstream media broadcast shock and alarm at state brutality towards nonviolent protesters. Many of France's Yellow Vests were glad the subject was reported upon, but the group which has been subject to more French police brutality than any group in recent memory wonders why their weekly protests and mistreatment are still under a media blackout.
Every Saturday for nearly 5 years, the Yellow Vests have been in the streets. In the big cities and the small towns, we make our legitimate demands for democratic and economic rights, and we won't stop until we get them.
Many were shocked this month when a woman who was not participating in a 2019 Yellow Vest demonstration and had been shot in the neck by a tear gas grenade was just judged to be co-responsible for her injuries. The judge said that the mother, who had gotten lost in a strange city while visiting her daughter, should have known that serious incidents had occurred at recent protests. The decision refused to find fault with the state's actions, seems to negate a citizen's right to travel freely, and will likely scare many away from even observing a yellow vest protest.
Un état totalitaire.
We aren't in a dictatorship, but in a totalitarian situation. The state wants everybody to keep quiet and to agree with whatever they say. This lack of democracy is why the yellow vests began in the first place. It wasn't over just gas prices. This woman's situation is one dramatic situation, but there are so, so many others like her.
On June 6th, a million-person march is expected, the 15th this year, in the ongoing fight against a two-year hike retirement age by presidential decree. Police brutality is expected to be even more rampant than at the previous such march on May 1st.
Pour leur physique de venir en manifestation.
The people are afraid for their own physical safety when they come to a protest now. There are so many arrests, so much violence, and constant tear gas. This is the reason why the number of people joining us dropped, even as our national problems keep growing worse.
Besides their Saturday marches, the yellow vests are present at seemingly every public protest in France, and often around Europe as well. They regularly contend that they are willfully ignored by the government and media, because the basis of their movement is economic and political redistribution. Ramin Mazahiri, Paris.
Iran's president has warned the Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries against some Western governments' attempts to sow discord among its member states. Ebrahim Raisi made the remarks during a meeting with OPEC Secretary General Haitham El-Rais in Tehran. Raisi said OPEC member states should work to promote unity within the organization to foil such plots. He added that Iran is ready to uplift cooperation with the organization, expressing hope that OPEC will be able to control the oil market's volatility in the coming months. Meanwhile, Al-Ghaz hailed Iran for its constructive cooperation with the organization, said that Tehran has always worked to foster unity among other OPEC members. He noted that unity within the organization will bring calm to the market. Journalist and political commentator Mohsen Abbas says the rise of the Eurasian Axis has caused tectonic changes in West Asia.
Well, it's quite clear that there are seismic changes going on in West Asia, and they're largely impacted by the rise of the Eurasian Axis. Saudis seem to want in on what's going on there and are very, very nervous, it seems, about the West's intentions and their long-term, if you like, interests being not so clean for the Saudis. So this is causing a lot of very, very rapid changes. And coming to what I was saying, the Americans are responding with threats. For instance, there's something called NOPEC that they've triggered, a sort of legal process where they want to be able to seize OPEC assets in the U.S., for instance. The U.S. shale response, for instance, it created higher prices, but it slowed down various elements within the actual production of oil. But the Americans have also, of course, used the International Energy Agency to release oil stocks last year as well. That didn't go down well with the Saudis. So there's a war going on here. Quite clearly, there is an oil tussle, a struggle going on, and it is, and the backdrop to it, of course, is the Eurasian Axis versus the American imperialist hold on West Asia. And it seems as though West Asia generally now is moving much more rapidly towards the Russians, the Chinese, and indeed the Iranians.
And with that, we come to an end for this edition of World News. Let's bye-bye for now.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily round the clock for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellite. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 25 meters, 11,645 kilohertz, every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz every day from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our programs via FM 91.5 megahertz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Iran Sat or Bat 5 and Intel Sat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Welcome back. In the first part of the Aperture, we witnessed various communities which have walled themselves in so that others may be kept out. In urban France, the middle class has increasingly retreated into gated communities. Likewise, in Rio de Janeiro, the middle class seeks to avoid the slums literally across the road from their gated condominiums. Stay with us for more as we explore the wall in Iraq, which American forces have constructed to cordon off the areas of Baghdad.
Abu Hazm's children go to school in Doura, within the walls that encircle the area. So, who wants the wall torn down? No one wants to keep it. What do you think will happen in the future? In Doura, our neighbourhood. Yes, Ali. I want more peace and no more walls and gardens. Sports clubs. Better education. So, less walls and more schools. I want to go to hospital without problems. How about you, Hausa? Take the walls away so I can get to the stadium easily. Tell me, what do you think when you see the walls? We're enclosed. It's like prison. I've tried to reassure them about the future. We talk about it, of their vision, and we all hope things will work out. Life doesn't stand still, it evolves. In the areas closest to the walls, the locals are particularly angry. Look, it's a prison. To go to the market, I need to take a taxi. And another one to come back. And the market is only a few steps away, behind the wall. And during school, it's even worse. The kids get all muddy. Okay, I know they want to stop the terrorists, but they could take away two pieces of the wall to make our lives a bit easier. It really affects us. Like from dawn till dusk, all we see is this wall. We all know each other here. We all have different religions, but there are no problems. Yeah, the wall drives me nuts. Look at my legs, I'm sick, and I don't have a car to get there. How am I meant to go to hospital? We're all depressed. Put yourself in our place. If you woke up and had this wall right in front of you every day, what would you do? Tell me. In February 2011, Iraqi demonstrators take part in the Arab Spring. They protest having to live walled up. In the weeks that follow the demonstrations, the government will organize a large-scale communications campaign. The Ministry of Interior takes two busloads of journalists to the areas once held by the insurgents, and now completely walled off. Good morning, sir. Now, would it help you if we remove some parts of the wall? Oh, yes, sir. The wall was very harmful to us, but it also brought you safety. Well, to begin with, yes, but that's all over now. So what would you like then? Leave the wall or take it away? Take it away, please. Where will we put it? Wherever you like. The next morning, it's back to the same area to see if the work is continuing. The crane has disappeared. Just the residents remain, as angry as ever. They never tell the truth. They promised the wall would be gone in a week. Nothing's changed. They say yes, 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 today for sure. And then they come back 2 years later. They built this wall as a barrier between my neighbors and myself. They should take it down and put it on the border with Saudi Arabia. They should have police patrols, not walls. In our brave new world, the differences between military and civilian security technology are becoming blurred. What the army invents to protect its own bases, gated communities adopt for the benefit of individuals.
So when the arm goes down, the teeth come up automatically. That way, if a vehicle tries to ram through the arm, they're going to shred their tires.
Now you have digital zoom while recording the entire area, so you're not losing any video coverage while tracking a person or an automobile that might be coming onto your property.
And present a card, and then this sends the data stream to an access controller, so you can select when someone can get in and when they can get out.
We can put our software, it can be loaded on a smartphone. So if there's a violation at the north gate coming into the gated community, the guard can get an alert on his smartphone with the video clip.
There's like an integration of military materials and civilian materials in terms of security nowadays.
Correct, correct. For residential use, it's just a lighter duty machine, as opposed for things that are built specifically for military or border operations, they have to be much heavier duty.
Thais's mother wants to buy an apartment in this condominium that is even more luxurious than their own. But it's even further from the center of Rio. Regis lives on the other side of the railings, just a few meters away, but has never stepped foot inside.
Do you have any friends inside?
Very few. Well, actually, none. I don't know anyone. But, you know, I don't want to climb the wall that encircles them. I'm not interested in that. I'm just not curious about what it's like inside. I know the kind of person that lives there. My boss, for example. I've never been to his house, but I've got a pretty good idea what it's like. White shirt, yellow tie. Security is very polite. And they don't miss a thing. It's like a labyrinth, a maze. You go in one side and out the other. At least there is an exit. Regis might have said no, but passing the splendid houses every day, he does dream of winning the lottery. Yeah, of course, I'd buy myself a beautiful place. A manor even, with a football pitch, a pool, barbecue. And what about security? I don't know if I'd have any. Maybe a camera and a pit bull. Compared to the favelas in Rio, The Mirai housing estates are havens of tranquility. Hey, no scooters here. It's no good. There are people who live here. And it's not good for the kids. Go on, guys. All they have in common is the absence of the state. When his neighborhood became dangerous for the public services, Zubir spoke to the housing administration about controlling the rowdier elements. The mediator's method is to be firm, but not unpleasant. And there's a place available until midnight for the kids who have nowhere else to go. In the past, it was the community police that did this kind of work. Jean-Pierre Avrin used to be the head of the Toulouse police. He's now left the national force and is working for the municipal police. He'd set up a community policing project in the housing estates of Mirai. The video is barely 10 years old, but is now almost historic, certainly unusual. Relaxed-looking police in shirt sleeves in Mirai. The police should not be cut off from the people. It won't be effective. The police have to be close to the citizens. It's the only way to make it work. I think the community police I knew was well liked by the residents. They used to call the youngsters by their first names. And instead of fining them something straight away, they'd say, "Oh, if you could move your car, please, that would be great." They spoke to the kids, and the kids would shake their hands. Now, if you shake a policeman's hands, you'd be considered an informer. Nicolas Sarkozy puts an end to community policing when he is the Interior Minister in 2003. He summons Avrin and his men before the cameras to let them know he's not pleased by their results. There are many of you where the delinquents are.
Vous n'êtes pas des travailleurs sociaux.
You're not social workers. The principal mission of the police is to investigate, arrest, and fight criminal behavior. When I look at the statistics of 2001, 2002 are bad enough, but 2001, to humiliate police officers live in front of the cameras, I had never seen anything like that before. For those who were present, for the policemen, those who were involved for 4 years, to tell them like that, it was a disgrace, disloyal. In the 3 years after the disbanding of the community police, the incidence of violent crime increased by 48% in Mirai. And the rioting witnessed throughout France in 2005 ravages the neighborhood. If they venture into Mirai these days, the police come in body armor. The area is tough, and not just for the police. The nurses don't come as often, neither do the firemen, and the ambulances have stopped coming altogether. It sort of became abandoned because they were scared about being ambushed by the youngsters. Not to mention the police. To them, they are the state. So people no longer support the state. Well, let's say they don't trust the state anymore. In the 7 days spent on the estates, we only spotted one police car, and that was a long way off. After saying we could interview them, the Toulouse police changed their minds. In 3 years, the national police force has been cut by 11,000. You can't claim that security is a priority if you cut thousands of police jobs. There was a sharp increase in the number of cars burned, physical attacks, the absence of police on the ground, especially in the more difficult zones. As soon as authority is absent, especially the police, it's like nature, which can't stand vacuum. It creates a replacement authority, which may differ depending on the area or circumstances. I was summoned before senior police officers, and they said, "So, what's all this about them? Is it a militia?" Everyone's talking about it. They felt threatened by it. It bothered them, calling us a militia. A militia with no weapons. If you want to call us a militia without weapons. Our weapons are words. That's it, really. It's a small aperitif in the open air. Here we are then. We said we wouldn't make too much noise so as not to be a nuisance. After that, we said, well, you had better leave. Take your bottles and leave. And don't leave bottles lying around here because they get broken and that could cause a lot of damage. The difference is that if a policeman comes to check us, he might smile, but he's stressed. I don't know if he lives out in the countryside and then comes here, but it's better when people who grew up around here and who know what it's all about and who's who, they sort of understand all of that. We're here to stay with them, sorted out peacefully, quietly like. We're getting ready, it seems, to allow private security firms to take over some of the work on public property, say, which is a terrible mistake, because all it will do is aggravate the differences between the haves and the haves-not. A two-speed security, in other words. There'll inevitably be one sort of security for the rich and another for the poor, to put it simply. The Rocinha Favela in Rio. The city's prefect is about to inaugurate a brand new health center in the middle of the favela. The drug traffickers are invisible. The prefect has come without an armed escort. We're going to urbanize all the favelas in the city by 2020. All of them. Rocinha will change. There'll be peace. And listen well, I mean peace. The governor will be responsible. Everyone has a right to live and live in good health. Here's the plaque, so applause now. For President Lula's Brazil, the fight against crime means investing in the public services. The people know it, and so do the thugs. The party's over here. At the same time, we need health and education programs, more daycare, more buildings, and to change the urban policies. All that will transform people's lives. Itamar Silvia has lived his entire life in a favela and was one of the first to benefit from state aid. He's a respected intellectual and a man who is angry. In his view, more than public funds will be needed to tear down the walls which separate the rich and the poor in Brazil. The investment we're seeing today in the favelas is only very recent. It's considered dangerous, a place that needs supervision, otherwise we'll all become criminals. What I say, it's not true. If it was true, there would have been a revolution a long time ago. Yes, unfortunately, because that's what we need to happen. In the evening, there's a big party in Rocinha. A new street has been opened. The government has demolished some hovels and built a sort of avenue whose buildings match the acrobatic and multicolored style of the favelas. Another reason to party. The drug traffickers have hung up their weapons and made way for samba. In the background are the condominios, over which night is falling in complete safety. Tell me, wouldn't you be better off in a condominium? Listen, I've been here 50 years and I'm not budging. It's marvelous up here. But you don't want to be safer? Oh, it's very safe here. Anyone can come here and everyone is welcome. No problems.
Speaking of walls, perhaps we can mention more walls which are undermining regional and world peace. The segregation wall built by the Zionist regime of Israel in the West Bank, Palestine. And the recent wall in Hungary, built to keep out asylum seekers trying to reach Europe. And that's it for this week on Aperture. Until next week and another episode of Aperture, goodbye. Thank you.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
It guides us through life. It has taught us everything. We should learn and appreciate what it gives us. And try to apply them to our daily lives. How is it possible? By means of Quran.
این خوندن قرآن و تلاوت قرآن قدم اول است برادران من این قدم آخر نیست
Reading and recitation of the Quran is the first step brothers not the last one
هو الذی ارسل رسوله بالهدى ودین
It is he who has sent his apostle with the guidance and the religion of truth that he may make it prevail over all religions though the polytheists should be averse
والذي ارسل رسوله بالهدى ودين الحق ليظهره على الدين كله ولو كره المشركون
تلاوت قرآن با صوت خوش با آداب که شیوه خاصی دارد موسیقی خاصی دارد روش خاصی دارد
Recitation of the Quran in nice tones should be performed according to particular methods and tones. But it's not enough.
مشکل بزرگ مسلمانان دنیا دوری از قرآن. دوری از قرآن.
Muslims' major problem is losing touch with the Quran. Quran, Quran.
This is
for a better life.
For a better life.
فرمود باعث تو لأتمم مکارم الاخلاق.
The Holy Prophet of Islam says, "I have been sent to complete noble manners."
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. This is For a Better Life from IRB English Radio. I am your host, Sayyid Mahdi Tawakkul. This discussion is related to Islamic lifestyle and is based on the Quran and Islamic narrations. Today I want to talk about a new topic, which is that a person should try to create harmony between his hidden inner and his outer expression. Let me explain it. What I mean is that under normal circumstances, a person should not hide something in his heart and then be forced to behave contrary to that. If we have a kind of feeling that bothers us in normal situations, we can share it with others. Not letting others understand our emotions forces us not to behave normally. And we should pretend that we are satisfied with everything while we are not. Trying to behave in a way that is contrary to what we have in our heart makes the life more difficult, because we always have to play a role. For example, we might be angry with someone or upset with someone, but due to some circumstances, we may prefer not to say anything directly to that person, to tell him about our anger and our disturbance. In such cases, people who conceal something in their heart try to play roles where they are with those people. They force themselves to smile while they are angry, try to keep their composure while they are impatient. Such cases take place so much in our life. We come across with many situations that we hide something within ourselves and does not reveal it to others, but for not revealing it, we put ourselves in trouble. Because in this situation, we should be always watchful and careful not to act abnormally. It not only adds to your discomfort, but also hiding an intense negative emotion usually makes it more intense and more rigorous. But if we share to others, but of course in a controlled way, we would find out that it was solved much easier than we had thought before. The mistake is that in this way that we try to hide our inner feelings, suddenly and unconsciously reveal it through our words or through our behavior. As an instance, if you hate someone too much but don't want him to realize it, you may suddenly criticize him, or maybe do not honor him as you should. Do not listen to his words while he is talking. Do not answer his call. Do not invite him to your house, or to do whatever of things that if he is clever and intelligent, may realize that something is wrong here. So when we cannot control ourselves, we had better be honest to others. We had better not to play roles that much in life. Sometimes we need to be real. We need to act normally and to behave in an ordinary way. Of course, I don't want to say that we have to reveal our inner feeling to everyone, or for example, tell someone that we hate him or are angry with him, dislike one of his manners and the like. Not at all, because telling others about our feelings towards them may bring enmity. Rather, I want to say that we should not be like an actor and actress in our life, to mostly play a role and to show something that is in contradiction with our reality. If we do this, I mean if we are not real and to usually try to play a role, it has two disadvantages. Number one, we instead of being real and act normally, have to mostly play a role, and it adds too much disturbance in our life. It makes the life very uncomfortable. Number two, if we are not real, many mistakes would appear in our words and in our treatment that would unveil our inner feeling. It could be deeply disturbing if we try to play a role and not to be successful. Or in other words, to bother ourselves to hide our feeling and in addition not to be successful and involuntarily reveal our feelings. Because of these two undesirable results, we had better try to be always real, try to act in a normal way, unless we find it necessary to hide something. Let's go for a short break. I am Said Mehdi Tawakkol, and I will be back soon to talk about other related points to this subject. I was talking about the importance of having a real life and the bad effect not to be real and play roles all the time. People who play roles in their life and hide their true nature psychologically want to keep others satisfied. These people want to show that everything is just fine, there is nothing to disturb them, and to be 100% sure that those who are with them are totally happy with them. These people are so cautious in their speech and in their behavior that they make life very difficult for themselves. As I said, to some extent we have to hide our inner feeling and should not reveal it. But if this kind of behavior becomes a part of our life, it is absolutely problematic. people are never 100% satisfied with others. So even if we try our best to make others happy with ourselves, there are still many things in us that others don't like. So it's better not to always play roles. Imam Ali, in a meaningful narration, says, "ما أضمر أحد شيئا إلا ظهر في فلتات لسانه وصفحات وجهه." There is no person who conceals a thing in his heart that it manifests itself through unintentional words from his tongue and in the expression of his face. This narration alludes to some points. First, do not bother yourselves to act contrary to your feeling, because you cannot be always successful, since the inner feeling will manifest itself while you are not aware. Second, playing role and trying to show always smiling lip makes life unreal and causes too much disturbance and brings about anxiety, and it would become a big concern in one's life. So do not be strict on yourself, and do not try to always make others satisfied with yourself, since even if you try to make others happy with yourselves, you cannot succeed. The third point, which is very important, is that Imam Ali, in this mentioned narration, wants to say that even if you feel bad about someone, try to correct yourself. Pay attention to this crucial point. Sometimes we hold someone's grudge in our heart. Sometimes we dislike someone's behavior. We want to criticize someone, or we hate someone. Having these negative feelings about other people is usually negated in Islam. If our heart is full of these negative emotions, this source of negative attitudes about others, we will reveal it unintentionally. So we had better realize that others are normal people like us. They have their own mistakes, their own vision, their own taste, and their own perspective. We are not all the same. We are different, and being different is a part of our life. Then it should never lead to grudge, enmity, and hatred. Again, I need to repeat and remind the fact that what I am saying so far is a general principle in life, and it of course has some exceptions. Sometimes we should not conceal our feeling about others, we have to reveal it. Sometimes we need to pretend we are happy while we are not. Sometimes we have to play a role, but these are exceptions. As a result, a wise man can study the condition and decide which strategy is more appropriate to be adapted. And whatever we do should be something that makes us closer to the will of Allah. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Every grain of sand in every desert land he knows. Every shade of palm, every closed hand he knows. Every sparkling tear on every eyelash he knows. Every thought I have and every word I share.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.